Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our fall membership drive. More about that in just a minute. From the Wright brothers to the Tuskegee Airmen to the seeds of NASA, Ohio has played a huge role in the history of American aviation. We're talking about that history today. Brad Lang is a pilot with the Commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron, which continues the legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. Brad Lang, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Janet Bednarik is a professor of history at the University of Dayton, where she teaches classes in aviation history. She also worked as a historian with the United States Air Force at Bowling Air Force Base and the Pentagon, and at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Janet Bednarik, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
You know, Janet, where do you fall on the Ohio versus North Carolina competition over being the birthplace of aviation?
Oh, on the Ohio side, of course.
Okay. Just wanted to get that straight right off the bat. But, you know, it is disputed. The history of aviation in Ohio starts with the Wright brothers. I mean, what more do you need to know? But can you kind of give us a thumbnail on their history and their link to Ohio?
Well, the Wright brothers lived most of their lives in Ohio. Orville Wright, in fact, was born in Dayton, Ohio. And it was in their Dayton, Ohio bike shop that they decided that they were going to explore heavier than air flight. And it was there that they did the important research and development necessary to develop their first airplane prototype, which they did test in North Carolina. I'll give it North Carolina that. But again, the important research and development happened here in Dayton. And then after that flight in 1903, they spent 2 years at the Huffman Prairie Flying Field, which is where Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is now, perfecting that prototype and turning it into a practical airplane by October of 1905.
Why did they go to North Carolina in the first place?
They were looking for some place that had a steady wind. To get the aircraft aloft, you need to produce lift over the wings. And they wanted aircraft generally take off into the wind to provide some extra lift. And so they were looking for a place that had the most steady, predictable winds. And the U.S. Weather Service pointed them to North Carolina.
Is there a way to describe the aviation as a part of the culture of Ohio?
Well, Ohio certainly has embraced aviation, particularly since the Wright brothers. From Dayton to Cincinnati to Columbus to Cleveland, there are important figures in aviation history who come out of Ohio. Lots of aviation firsts in Ohio. Ohio now has the Wright Flyer on its state seal. So aviation is an industry and a technology that many, many people in Ohio over the last 100 or so years have certainly embraced.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our fall membership drive. We count on listeners for the most important part of our budget. We rely on listener support to bring you great programs every day. One of the things you count on from public radio is bringing you fact-based journalism. Support our efforts to bring you news you can rely on. Please make your gift right now at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. This hour of All Sides, we're talking about aviation, and we're offering a really interesting and special thank you gift. When you make a gift of $15 a month, as a sustainer, you will get a pair of tickets to the Columbus Air Show. After a nearly 20-year absence, the air show returns to Central Ohio next summer. The event will be held at Rickenbacker International Airport and features lots of amazing activities. You can see aircraft and pilots in action and see the world-renowned Blue Angels. This is the first time the Blue Angels will be in Columbus since 1995. Don't miss your chance to support public radio and secure your tickets, your pair of tickets, to the Columbus Air Show. For your gift of $15 a month, we'll send you two tickets plus a parking pass for Friday, June 16th. Secure your ticket now when you give $15 a month or a one-time gift of $180 at WOSU.org or when you call 866-897-9678. If there's an aviation buff in your life, this is the moment to call. 866-897-9678. Or go to WOSU.org. Remember, your gift today supports national news from NPR and international news from the BBC. And your gift supports local news on 89.7 NPR News and this local talk show. If you listen to this show regularly, then you know that we work hard to bring you a show that is interesting and informative. We do that with listener support. Gifts from listeners are the most important part of our budget. You count on public radio to bring you news and information every day, and we count on you to help us keep that news on the air. Give now and take advantage of our special thank you gift. Get two tickets to the Columbus Air Show after a nearly 20-year absence, and we'll have parking vouchers as well for Friday, June 16th. That's $15 a month as a sustaining member or a one-time gift of $180. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And one of the groups that will have a role in the air show come next summer is the Air Force, the commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron. Brad Lang, tell us what the squadron is, what its relationship is with the Tuskegee Airmen.
Sure. Well, the CF Red Tail Squadron is one unit or section of the parent organization, the Commemorative Air Force. And the idea is to inspire folks, the general public, with the history and legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. And we do that by operating a aircraft representative of what they flew, in this case, a P-51C Mustang. And we also have a Rise Above exhibit, which features a panoramic movie that we put together inside a semi-trailer that folks can go and watch and observe interviews with airmen and see a program that talks about the history of the airmen.
They are the airmen. Have they all passed now? What do we know? Who's
no.
left there?
No. So just to clear up a couple of misconceptions, when people talk about the Tuskegee Airmen, a lot of times they only talk about the pilots, but there are roughly 10 to 14 support personnel for every pilot. And just like folks always would like to just mention the quarterback on a football team, without the linebacker and the blockers, you wouldn't have the quarterback very successful. So when we talk about the airmen, we're really talking about anyone, male or female, black or white, who served at Tuskegee Army Airfield between 1941 and 1949. So it's not just the pilots, it's a team concept. And of those pilots, I'd say roughly there are probably less than 35 alive at this point. Of the entire group, there are probably less than 100 alive that we're aware of.
Why? What's your mission? Why is it important to remember this?
Well, one of the things that folks tend to forget is back in World War II, we lived in a segregated country. And so the airmen actually were put to task to try to provide a service, and that is escort bombers in the war with their aircraft. But to do that, they had to go through a segregated training regimen in Tuskegee, Alabama. And the important thing that we're trying to teach folks is that, you know, with all the adversity that they went through, they were still able to be successful and still became productive citizens after they flew the aircraft as well. So there was a lot of hardship that they overcame, and you can overcome adversity as well if you try to incorporate some of the values that we think are important that the airmen used.
And there's a Columbus connection.
Well, at the very end of the war, 46 to 49, the airmen moved to Lockbourne Air Base for their final chapter. And during that time, the Army Air Corps became the US Air Force. But yeah, for a short period of time, they were at Lockbourne. And in fact, one of their more famous endeavors was to operate a squadron out of Lockburn of P-49 N model Thunderbolts, which actually were involved in what we call the tactical gunnery meetup in Las Vegas, Nevada, or Nellis, Nevada. And that was the Air Force's version of Top Gun. And the Tuskegee Squadron, 332nd Squadron with the P-47s actually won their division of the Top Gun trophy back in 1949. And they're from Lockburn.
You know, Janet Bednarik, the Tuskegee story, Brad Lang just said they were very successful, but they were more than very successful. They were renowned, weren't they?
Absolutely, particularly after the war. Of course, during the war, a lot of mainstream society wasn't really aware of them. They were mostly famous because of the black newspapers covered them extensively during the war. But after the war, the Tuskegee Airmen were key to the desegregation of the military, and particularly the United States Air Force. People could point to them in particular after the war as a reason why the military should be desegregated. And so many African-Americans who have had illustrious careers within the military, including Colin Powell, have pointed back to the Tuskegee Airmen as the trailblazers who really opened the path for those who came after them.
How many, Brad Lang, how many people are involved in CAF?
Well, the CAF is a very large organization. So our squadron in particular has about 35 folks, but the parent organization itself is fairly large and has about 13,000, 15,000 members, some in different countries as well. And the CAF Commemorative Air Force has about 60 different aircraft types, 175 different airplanes, and they're all scattered throughout the country trying to tell the story of the men and women who operated these aircraft in World War II.
Why in different countries?
Well, you know, believe it or not, you have aircraft nerds, airplane nerds everywhere. So in France and Italy, you still have folks who understand the importance of World War II, and they wanted to be a part of an organization that supports restoring the aircraft. And so that's why you have fans around the world.
So Brad Lang of the Commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron just said it better than I ever could. There are aircraft nerds everywhere. And that should be, we're calling all aircraft nerds out there and people who know aircraft nerds. This is the fall membership drive on 89.7 NPR News. And this hour is all about the history of aviation in Ohio, plus Ohio's connection to the Tuskegee Airmen. We are talking about aviation in connection with the Columbus Air Show, which is returning to Central Ohio for the first time in nearly 20 years. Soon you'll have a chance to see the famous Blue Angels in action right in our own backyard. And we have a special offer for 89.7 NPR News members who give this hour. But also remember that 89.7 NPR News is your source for global and local news every day. Your financial support helps us bring this public service to even more people just like you. Help us continue to grow our community of public radio listeners. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We're excited to offer our thank you gift this hour, two tickets and a parking pass, the all-important parking pass, for the Columbus Air Show on Friday, June 16th. Secure your tickets now to this great event. It's been nearly 20 years since the air show has been in Central Ohio. It will be held at Rickenbacker International Airport next summer. With your tickets, you will get to see the heart-pounding air performances and see lots of aircraft and pilots in action. The air show includes performances from some of the nation's top aviation entertainers and see on-the-ground attractions, including displays such as the Commemorative Air Force Rise Above exhibit, which tells the story of the Tuskegee Airmen, and an exhibit about women Air Force service pilots. Plus, all children under 15 get into the show for free with an accompanying ticket holder. you. So when you get two tickets as your thank you gift today, you can also take your kids to the show with you. Make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180 and get two tickets plus a parking pass. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Your gift today gives you a great thank you gift, but more importantly, your gift also supports public radio and this show. All Sides has been covering the news, and there's a lot of news out there, folks. It just seems to keep coming. But among all those news shows out there, there's also room for a show like this one, a show about aviation and the history of flight in Ohio. If you appreciate the news shows and these types of shows as well, then make a gift today and show your support at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That's 866-897-9678. And again, our guests, Janet Bednarik, professor of history at the University of Dayton. She's also worked as a historian with the United States Air Force at Bowling Air Force Base, the Pentagon, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And also with us, Brad Lang. He is a pilot with the Commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron, which continues the legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. Brad, how did you get involved in this?
You know, back in the 90s, I was actually flying a small aerobatic airplane at a contest in Texas. And I had a friend who was involved with the Commemorative Air Force wing up in Minnesota, which is up in actually Minneapolis, Minnesota. And he told me that they were putting together a P-51 Mustang C model, which is a very rare version of the Mustang, and that it was going to be painted up in Tuskegee colors. Now, also concurrently, the same person had met my father, who was a Tuskegee Airman. And he said, hey, given your history with your dad and your current flying these different airplanes, it might be something that you want to get involved with. And so that's how I initially got involved with the CAF.
And I read that you had to raise a lot of money to get the first one off the ground.
Well, the
first one you worked on.
Well, yeah, the Mustang that we worked on and restored was actually in pieces. It was built in 1944 and was stationed down in St. Petersburg, Clearwater area. And then at the end of the war in 1945, it was donated to Bozeman State University, where it sat on campus outside. And unfortunately, when you're outside, the conditions and the environment tends to break down an aircraft. And so the hulk that we got needed a lot of work to get together. And when you restore an older vehicle, car, or airplane, or boat, just takes a lot of fundraising and a lot of tenacity to get the project going. So a lot of fundraising, a lot of effort to try to get the aircraft into its current state.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our fall membership drive. Remember, your gift today gets you a great thank you gift. We've been talking about, we're excited to offer our thank you gift this hour, two tickets and a parking pass for the Columbus Air Show on Friday, June 16th. All Sides has been covering the news. There's a lot happening every single day, something new. We cover it, and we don't just cover it. We drill down and take it apart and think about it. If that is something that matters to you, give us a call right now, 866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org and show your support for 89.7 NPR News. If you're a history buff, you know I am too. If I can find a history angle to anything, I've got a historian on the show. I always like to look back and think, how did we get here? And there's only one way you can do that, and that's with a real historian who knows their stuff. And Janet Bednarik is the person today. Professor of History at the University of Dayton. We do that routinely on any number of topics, from housing history to automobile history to sports history. You name it. If there's a history angle, we'll cover that because it's important to have context. And context is something you've come to expect at 89.7 NPR News. This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Support the station you depend on for that context at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That's 866-897-9678. Make that call right now while we're on the air. At whatever level you can afford, every level you can manage, maybe you're already a sustaining member. Maybe this is the time to give a little more or increase your sustainer level. 866-897-9678. You know, Janet Bednarik, when I moved to Columbus 30 plus years ago, Eddie Rickenbacker this and Eddie Rickenbacker that. I mean, I never really, it took me years to kind of figure out who he was. Give us a thumbnail on Eddie Rickenbacker and his relationship to Ohio, to Columbus, and what's his story?
Well, Eddie Rickenbacker, again, is one of those people in Ohio who came to embrace aviation. He was born and raised in Columbus, and initially he became a race car driver. He was a very, very good race car driver. But then World War I came about, and he wanted to fight. And in fact, he wanted to fly and fight. Unfortunately, he was a little too old for the pilot training program, but he was able to convince them that since he was a very successful race car driver, he must have the hand and eye coordination necessary to fly an airplane. And so they let him in, even though he was technically too old to go into the training. And it turned out to be a good decision because he turned out to be a very good pilot. He was an ace during World War I. He came back and continued to work actually in the automotive industry, but got connected to General Motors. And then through that, it's kind of a long, convoluted story, but he came to head up Eastern Airlines. And he's very well known for building Eastern into the very successful and prestigious airline that it became by the 1960s.
What were the national air races, and why did Cleveland play such a big role in that, Janet?
The national air races were contests that were aimed at essentially pushing the technology forward. The mantra in aviation is higher, farther, faster. And so the national air races were there to give people an incentive to build aircraft year after year after year that could fly higher, farther, and faster. And Cleveland became one of the key centers of the national air races. They had an early municipal airport, and that airport then had a flying field next to it that was dedicated to the national air races. And so while the air races went to different locations over the years, Cleveland proved to be its most, say, enthusiastic host. And also there was a company in Cleveland called Thompson Products that built things for the aviation industry that offered the Thompson Trophy as part of the national air races. And so increasingly, they came to be centered in Cleveland, not only the long distance races, which they were known for, but also the circuit races, see how fast you can fly. So particularly by the late 1920s and through the 1930s, if you wanted to see the best pilots, male or female, and you wanted to see the hottest aircraft, you went to Cleveland. Especially during air races time.
For your gift of $15 a month as a sustainer, you can get two tickets and a parking pass to the Columbus Air Show. Your tickets will be for Friday, June 16th, and the air show is happening at Rickenbacker International Airport, named for Eddie Rickenbacker. Rickenbacker, formerly known as Lockbourne Air Army Air Base, was the home of the Tuskegee Airmen after World War II, and the air show will have an exhibit honoring the Tuskegee Airmen. The air show will feature heart-pounding air performances and family-friendly activities. The show will also feature the world-renowned U.S. Navy Blue Angels. Don't miss your chance to secure tickets to this event and support 89.7 NPR News at the same time. The air show has been absent from Central Ohio for nearly 20 years, but now it's back, and you don't want to miss it. Make a gift of $15 a month, although I will take $1,500 a month if there's anybody out there, or a one-time gift of $180 and get two tickets plus a parking pass. Support public radio and get a great thank you gift in return. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thanks to Polly Moore in Johnstown for your support of 89.7 NPR News. With your gift, you will be supporting public radio. Your gift to 89.7 NPR News right now supports the conversations you will hear on all sides in the months to come. We talk about local issues and we discuss global issues with a local perspective. All Sides is a show you're not going to find anywhere else on the radio, only on 89.7 NPR News. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And don't miss out on the tickets to the Columbus Air Show. Give $15 a month today and get two tickets plus parking. And kids under 15 get into the show for free with a ticket holder so you can bring the whole family to the show when you attend. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That's 866-897-9678. You know, Brad Lang, I'm interested in hearing more about your father, who was a member of the Tuskegee Airmen. What experiences, what did he share with you? What stories did he share with you about his experience and his time with the team?
Well, my father was down at Tuskegee at the very end of the war. He didn't actually go overseas and fight, but he came at the very end of the war. His stories are mostly related to the social aspect of being in Tuskegee back in the Jim Crow era, which was kind of challenging. And by that, I mean, everything was segregated. You knew that if you got too far off base in the wrong area, you might be threatened by the local police officers, or you may have an altercation with the local folks because they didn't want you there anyway. So it was kind of a challenging time to be a Black person in the South at Tuskegee. One of the stories he related to me, which I thought was kind of funny, is the white personnel down there had a regular swimming pool that they would frolic in. And at some point in time, because of the heat, he said that the Tuskegee Black personnel and officers wanted to have a pool. So what the folks at Tuskegee did was they dug a ditch, or emptied a ditch and made a ditch and filled it with water and said, hey, here's your swimming pool. So it was kind of funny that these guys were being trained to fight for their country, but they were given all these hurdles and challenges in Tuskegee, Alabama at the time, which went along with the culture as well.
And, you know, when the Air Force desegregated, along with the rest of the military, by presidential order after World War II, did that necessarily, Janet Bednarik, mean good things for the, you know, African-Americans who had fought in the war and those to come up the ranks afterward?
Well, it's one thing to order desegregation, which indeed the presidential order did. It was another thing to kind of change the hearts and minds of those who were in the service. And so there were some people who accepted the desegregation order and welcomed their new comrades, and others who continued to fight against them. And while the Air Force brand new was the first to desegregate, the other services drug their heels quite a bit. And so there's a number of years, even through the Korean War, where all of the services had to struggle to really fulfill the presidential order to desegregate. And of course, the military, particularly in the 50s, 60s through the Vietnam era, that was a draft military. And so it had people from all over American society and culture in it. And so it reflected American society and culture. And so, again, there were those who accepted a desegregated environment, and those who would have wished otherwise. And you have lots of cases where particularly African-American personnel who are stationed at bases in the southern part of the United States, where they would have free reign of the base, but once they got off the base, local Jim Crow rules would impede them. And you had some base commanders who kind of turned a blind eye, others who pushed against that, threatened to make towns off limits if base personnel weren't allowed to have access to everything that was in the town. So a lot of conflict and a lot of tension remain for a long time, and one could argue even to today that we still have some of that tension, but certainly a number of people, because those doors were opened, have been able to have successful careers within the military. And of course, the most best known to most Americans would be Colin Powell. But there are others in all of the services who have been able to succeed because the Tuskegee Airmen and others like them fought and opened those doors for them to start going through in the late 1940s.
Thanks to Ann Nelson of Westerville. Ann says she listens to 89.7 NPR News all day long. Thank you so much for listening, Ann, and thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News during our fall membership drive. 866-897-9678 is the number to call to show your support. You know, Brad, I'm wondering what your dad's observations were post desegregation of the military, and if that necessarily, it seems to me having the Tuskegee Airmen, that branch, gave people an opportunity to really show their stuff. Once it was desegregated, now you're up against the whole armed services.
Well, you know, it's twofold, and I want to just back up to a point. We're talking about the influence of the Airmen after the war and their successes. Military is one thing. I'm a civilian airline pilot, and so I just want to make sure folks understand that without them broaching, them being the Tuskegee Airmen, being successful in what they're doing, I probably wouldn't be talking to you as a captain for a major airline at this time, at least at this time. Mm-hmm. I would have been maybe 5 or 10 years after the down the line. But my point is the influence of having this group of men and women coming through and being successful taught the United States that, hey, listen, if given the opportunity to succeed or fail, that these folks will be successful in many cases. So that carries on to the civilian segment as well. My dad's segment history after the war was being a civilian person. He worked for Johnson & Johnson Publishing, for Ebony Magazine, Jet Magazine, and the Newark Board of Education, and later on the Housing Authority in New Jersey. But his focus and the impact on him from World War II was strictly, he always emphasized the discipline that he learned down at Tuskegee and how that made him successful as a person in whatever endeavor he went into.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our fall membership drive, and we're asking you to support public radio today at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. If you listen to All Sides every day, then you know this show is committed to producing in-depth, focused conversations on issues important to Columbus and Central Ohio. You hear from our weekly reporter, Roundtable, every Monday morning. You hear important information on what Ohio's upcoming elections are going to look like. You hear facts straight from experts so you can make important decisions for yourself, your family, and our community. And we don't shirk this responsibility during membership drive. I've got wonderful historian Janet Begnarek on and Brad Lang, who has a personal connection to the Tuskegee Airmen because his father was on that team, but he's also a pilot with the Commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron, which continues the legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. Support this local talk show that you rely on with a gift today at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We know you come to this show for news and information, but with how crazy the past 2 years have been, you also come to public radio because you're a lifelong learner. You're curious and want to expand your knowledge on lots of different topics, and that's what we're doing today. We're learning about the history of aviation in Ohio and about Ohio's connection to the Tuskegee Airmen. And that's why we're asking for your support. Make a gift in support of the variety of programs you hear, programs that inform you about the news of the day and programs that inspire you to learn something new. Give at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. When you make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer, you'll get two tickets and a parking pass to the Columbus Air Show. The air show returns to Central Ohio complete with the world-renowned Blue Angels. Don't miss your chance to secure tickets now. The tickets are for Friday, June 16th, and will include air performances by some of the nation's top aviation entertainers. Make that gift of $15 a month and get your tickets while supporting public radio. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And kids under 15, get into the show for free with a ticket holder so you can bring the family to the show when you attend. The air show is full of family-friendly activities. You can get up close to lots of aircraft and pilots, including restored historical aircraft, and have the opportunity to see vintage warbirds in action, in formation flying. Secure your tickets while supporting public radio and supporting all sides. Give $15 a month or a one-time gift of $180 when you go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You know, Janet Bednarik, why did Dayton end up being the home of Wright-Patt Air Force Base?
Well, again, remember the Wright brothers.
Okay.
During World War One, a number of civic leaders from Dayton made the case in Washington, D.C. that Dayton would be a great place to have some military installations. They established Wilbur Wright Field and the Fairfield Air Depot during World War One. Wilbur Wright Field was a training field, and the Fairfield Air Depot was a logistics. And then after the war, they continued to push for that. They also then in downtown Dayton, or just off downtown Dayton, they established McCook Field, which was a research and development field where the new air service was trying to improve the airplanes that they were flying. Then in the 1920s, those same civic leaders, afraid that McCook Field was going to be closed and that activity taken away, they then purchased additional land near where Wilbur Wright Field and the Fairfield Air Depot was to establish Wright Field. And what had been at McCook Field was moved to Wright Field. So by this time, you then had two airfields outside of Dayton. You had Wilbur Wright Field and the Fairfield Air Depot got renamed Patterson Field.
Okay.
For the nephew of John Patterson, the founder of NCR, who had trained and unfortunately died in a training accident there. So we had Patterson Field, and then on the other side of the hill, you had then Wright Field, which is where the McCook research and development activities went on. And then through World War II, they were separate airfields. But then after World War II, they were combined to become Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
You know, when they talk about making cuts from time to time, Wright-Patt seems like it's going to be on the chopping block. It always survives. What are your thoughts, Janet Bednarik, about the role that history plays in those decisions?
Certainly, Wright-Patterson is one of the more storied airfields for the Air Force. Again, it's tied to its very origins. It goes back to World War One. It's tied to the spiritual fathers of the Air Force, if you were, the Wright brothers. But also many, many important developments in the Air Force to fly higher, farther, and faster found their origins at Wright-Patterson. including the effort to break the sound barrier after World War II. A lot of space research actually happened at Wright-Patterson. It's just, it's where anyone who's an engineer in the Air Force, and my husband was an engineer in the Air Force, that's where they want to be. They want to be at Wright-Patterson. And so it's just, it's got a lot of history and heritage. And I think that that helps protect it, that when leadership are thinking about what are our important installations, where is the heritage of the Air Force, it's Wright-Patterson. And of course, the National Museum of the United States Air Force is also located on the property that's next to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So, I mean, there's just so much there that a tremendous amount would be lost if they ever closed it.
You know, I've been to a couple air shows in the past, and history plays a huge role at those air shows. The, you know, all kinds of, right up to, you know, space flight, up mm-hmm. to and including space flight, I should say. I remember going there and my son tried on a space helmet. You know, they really try to, I mean, they try to bridge all of these different eras of space, of air, yeah. Air travel and air flight. What are your thoughts about what people see at air shows and why they're important, Janet Bednarik?
Air shows are one of the few places where people who aren't pilots can get up close and personal with aircraft. All right. I know you get on an airplane when you go fly commercially, but all you really see is the interior of the aircraft. An air show is when you can come up and you can kick the tires and walk around the aircraft, talk to the people who fly it. And again, you can see the history of aviation at many of them, because many of these air shows do bring aircraft from different eras there. So you can see how aircraft have evolved quite remarkably over the last, not only 100 years, but even just the last 50 years.
Right.
So people can see that, they can touch it, they can get in the cockpit of an aircraft, they can talk to the people who fly them, who maintain them, who keep them flying, like the Commemorative Air Force. And it's a way to get them excited. So if they were already an aircraft nerd, it kind of reinforces them. But it's also important for young people, who, for their technology, it's all in their hand. It's in their cell phone. That's their important technology. This is getting them, hands-on with another technology that can also be very exciting, and something that they might want to get involved with. So I think that's why air shows are important. They draw people in. They allow them to kind of see behind the curtain what these technologies are really about, and talk to people who are excited about them, and that in turn can get them excited about these machines.
Thanks to Richard Fries in Columbus. Let's try to hear from five more people in the last 10 minutes of the show. Five more gifts to help make this hour a success. The number to call is 866-897-9678 or go to WOSU.org. It's easy peasy lemon squeezy. Just make that call, 866-897-9678. You know, Brad Lang, what about you? Do you go to a lot of air shows? What do you think about them?
Well, as Janet was saying, I think it's a great way to expose the public, not only aviation folks, but non-aviation folks, to American history or world history. And so in our case, we're flying a very unique aircraft, probably one of the more famous fighters, the P-51 Mustang, which is what the Ford Mustang was named after. It was named after, it was named after this airplane.
Okay.
People actually get to see the aircraft in flight, walk up to it, touch it, ask us questions about it. It's very visceral. It's one thing to read about a subject on paper. It's another thing to actually hear it, see it, touch it, experience it. And hopefully that creates a lot of inspiration and hope, and maybe affects you a little bit differently on your perspective on history. So I think air shows afford all of that. Just getting out to an air show in itself can be challenging, but for most folks, once they go, they're excited by it, and hopefully we'll share that excitement with their friends.
What's it like being a commercial airline pilot and then flying one of these antique planes? What's that like, Brad?
Well, it's a lot more exciting flying a fighter aircraft at 300 miles an hour versus flying a 767 or 757, which pays the bills. And plus, it's also unique because of the history of the airmen and what they did during World War II. So all that goes into play when any man or woman flies these aircraft and presents them for the public. You're sharing in a great history and also getting an understanding and of how the aircraft actually performs, which is in itself something you don't see all the time.
You know, I've really fallen down on the job, Janet Bednarik. I have not really mentioned women. You have a couple times, and Brad said men and women. But there's a whole nother piece of history there that is a lot of people are very familiar with. Tell us about women and how they've made their way in this field.
Well, women got an entry into this because, well, first of all, they fought from the very beginning to be pilots. They did not want the airplane to be gendered as something that was simply masculine. So just like the automobile, they wanted the airplane to also be something that men and women did. Although they faced a much more uphill battle in aviation than they did in the automobile. But women have been pilots from the very beginning. Airplane manufacturers hired them during the 1930s to sell aircraft. It was kind of a backhand compliment because they figured that the American public, if they saw a woman flying an aircraft, it can't be that hard to fly it. So more people would buy these aircraft. Then during World War II, there were a number of women who were hired by the military to fly military aircraft during the war. These are the women air service pilots, which I think you mentioned in one of your segues there. And these women were civilian employees of the military, but they flew everything that the military flew. Unfortunately, unlike the Tuskegee Airmen, these women, the prejudice that they faced proved to be a bit overwhelming. They were actually disbanded before the war was over. They were disbanded in December of 1944 and sent home. And women were not allowed to fly in the military until the 1970s. They weren't allowed to fly in commercial aviation until the 1970s. They could still fly in general aviation. We have from Columbus, we have Jerry Mock, who was a civilian general aviation pilot who becomes the first woman to fly solo around the world. So women could do that kind of thing, but it really is not until the 1970s that women are able to break down the barriers in military aviation and civil commercial aviation and begin to find a place for themselves. But even today, only about 5 to 6% of all pilots are women. And given the looming pilot shortage, the airlines, the military, everybody needs to do a lot better job of recruiting women into the field, not just as pilots, but as mechanics, as aeronautical engineers, the whole field. They really need to do a much better job. After closing those doors for many years, they've got to let them know these doors are wide open and please come in, and we need a lot more women in this field.
This is the Membership Drive on 89.7 NPR News. We're asking you to support All Sides with Ann Fisher with a gift today at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Every day we talk with newsmakers, lawmakers, and experts on this show. The news of the day is important, but taking breaks from the news with shows like this one, that's important too. Today we're learning about the Buckeye State's place in aviation history. The thank you gifts we're offering today are an extension of this conversation. Make a gift of $15 a month, and your thank you gift can be two tickets and a parking pass to the Columbus Air Show, which returns after a nearly 20-year absence. And you can secure your tickets now and begin to make your air show plans. Kids under 15 get into the show for free with a ticket holder so you can bring the family to the show when you attend. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That's $15 a month or a one-time gift of $180. Thanks to Elizabeth Skye in Columbus. Nice name, Elizabeth. Apropos. Four more gifts to go this hour. When you make a gift today, you are supporting this local talk show. All Sides worked hard every day to bring you news and information with the local perspective, and it made me think about something that my guest Brad Lang said earlier. You know, there's a lot more people than me behind this show. It's more than I, you know, I guess I'm piloting, but there's a lot of other people that are making it happen every day. Show your support for them and all the hard work they do. You're not going to find a show like All Sides anywhere else on the radio dial. You depend on NPR for national news. You hear international news from the BBC, and the WOSU news team is covering Central Ohio. Plus, All Sides with Ann Fisher is taking national, international, and local events and putting them into context for you, given an amount that works for you, and support this in-depth news coverage. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We're excited to offer our thank you gift this hour, two tickets and a parking pass for the Columbus Air Show on Friday, June 16th. Secure your tickets now to this great event. It will be held at Rickenbacker International Airport next summer. With your tickets, you will get to see heart-pounding air performances and see lots of aircraft and pilots in action. The air show includes performances from some of the nation's top aviation entertainers. On-the-ground interactions include historic displays, flight experiences, food, and more. Give $15 a month or a one-time gift of $180 when you go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That's 866-897-9678. Janet Bednarik, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. It's been fun.
Janet Bednarik is a professor of history at the University of Dayton, where she teaches classes in aviation history. She also worked as an historian with the United States Air Force at Bowling Air Force Base and the Pentagon and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And Brad Lang, thanks to you as well. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
It's Brad Lang. He's a pilot with the Commemorative Air Force Red Tail Squadron, which continues the legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. My guests today have both been sharing their insights into the Tuskegee Airmen and the relationship that they had with Ohio. If this kind of conversation is important to you, then we're asking you to show your support right now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our fall membership drive, and we count on listeners for the most important part of our budget. We rely on listener support to bring you great programs every day. One of the things you can count on from public radio is bringing you fact-based journalism. Support our efforts to bring you news you can rely on. Please make your gift right now at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. That's 866-897-9678. For this hour of All Sides, we're talking about aviation, and we're offering a special thank you gift. When you make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer, you get a pair of tickets to the Columbus Air Show. After a nearly 20-year absence, the air show returns to Central Ohio next summer. The event will be held at Rickenbacker International Airport. It features lots of amazing activities. You can see aircraft and pilots in action. You can see the world-renowned Blue Angels. This is the first time the Blue Angels will be in Columbus since 1995. Don't miss your chance to support public radio and secure your tickets to the Columbus Air Show. If you're a history buff, the Columbus Air Show is a place, is an event you don't want to miss. For your gift of $15 a month, we'll send you two tickets plus a parking pass for Friday, June 16th. This is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus and online at WOSU.org. It's a service of WOSU Public Media. 89.7 NPR News, global, local. Remember, your gift today supports national news from NPR and international news from BBC. And your gift supports local news on 89.7 NPR News and this local talk show. If you listen to this show regularly, then you know that we work hard to bring you a show that is interesting and informative. We do that with listener support. Gifts from listeners are the most important part of our budget. We depend on you. You count on public radio to bring you news and information every day, and we count on you to help us keep that news on the air. Give now and take advantage of our special thank you gift. Get two tickets to the Columbus Air Show plus parking for Friday, June 16th. That's $15 a month as a sustaining member or a one-time gift of $180. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and thanks for your support.